you very much for joining. We'll just wait a few more minutes, well, actually not a second or so, before we get started. It's going to be a very interesting call. 60 minutes will fly by. Just need to get started quickly. Just waiting for a few more people. Hi, Farhan. It's nice to see you. Thank you for joining.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thank you.
Nice to see people on video as well, actually. Okay, we'll just get started whilst people are joining us. Thank you very much for joining us on time. A very good afternoon. And thank you for joining the Q3 Career Management Forum. For those of you who do not know me, I am Gwen Walcock, the CEO of Armstrong Wolf. If you're not too familiar with Armstrong Wolf, we facilitate dialogue amongst all CEOs in capital markets and asset management globally, and provide solutions development in line with the changing regulatory landscape. And we also have a strong focus on human capital management and aim to professionalize the CEO role as a career goal, the one you would choose as a destination. The community we manage is all inclusive and is irrelevant of gender or seniority. As part of my remit, I also manage the Women in the CEO Community program. These forums promote the role of Chief Operating Officer, especially to female talents who make excellent leaders, but who have, unfortunately for some, been seen to make alternative career choices and have left the industry during the pandemic. We need to learn from that. So today's discussion is very relevant in the development of your career and in developing your leadership skills, as we're focusing our attention on career challenges and how to address them. And as with any challenges, come pressure points, setbacks, and sometimes stressful situations. So we will discuss how to manage those, leading us towards the topic of mental health in the workplace. So these past 18 months have put pressure on everyone. There's absolutely no doubt about this. We are building our recovery period, and our resilience is how we are looking to recharge, not how we endure. So the next evolution for this year is, amongst many things, to embrace the challenge of supporting the return to work, the workplace, providing empathetic and supportive leadership. We hear a lot about authentic leadership, and that's demonstrating clearly what you expect of others and your team in these challenging times. Yes, we will be hungry for P&Ls and targets. These pressure points will not go away. Right, the opposite probably, in fact, as this year we become more commercially focused. But communication is likely to be one of the most powerful tools we have. Communication will support us in the growing career challenges and stresses. And as CEOs are now having to help people in their ecosystems find meaning and realize purpose at work by deploying various new sustainability, ESG and wellness strategies. And that, in addition to having a 1 to 3 or maybe 5 year view in all aspects, from risks to budgeting to regulations, lots to think about. These decisions take planning, need time in a very fast-paced environment, likely require new skill sets that you may or may not have in a changing landscape. So feeling the pressure is very common in the role of the CEO. I am hoping that today you will gain insight into the relationship between our physical health and mental well-being for what I wish for you, a successful and fulfilling career, one we aim to get you to be in control of. Like in any role, but particularly for a CEO, if you want to be successful, the type of person who will survive and thrive in their career is someone who can apply the knowledge acquired, learn from the lesson, but who also has an adaptable mindset with structured thinking in the changing landscape. So to this end, I'm very pleased to introduce you to Kate Hutchins. Hi, Kate. Kate is London-based and our head of career management practice, and is here to support you if you need career management advice. So just to note, though, Kate is not a health coach. This is not what today is about. But if you need support with health-related questions, I just do encourage you to speak to your employee assistant or HR teams. I'm also delighted to welcome our two guest speakers from BNP Paribas today. So thank you very much for coming on, Susana Castillo and George Nunn. Susana Castillo is Managing Director and Head of Conduct for CIB Americas, and George Nunn is also Managing Director and CEO of GBM Americas. So welcome to you both. Susana, may I give you the stage, if possible, to introduce yourself, please, and provide a bit of background on your career to date and tell us why you have joined us to talk about career challenges and how to manage stresses at work.
Well, how long do you have? That's quite a tall order for the next 5 minutes, but okay. So for those friends that I haven't met yet, my name is Susana Castillo. As Gwen said, I'm the head of conduct here at BNP Americas, and I'm also the chief conduct and controls officer for global markets in the Americas. My career path has been windy. What I call the circuitous route to a degree. My mother would say that I dropped out of school and made her cry every day. But I started out in public service once I finally did get my degree. I worked at the White House and at the New York Fed. Before going back to graduate school, I spent 10 years in equity derivatives, both at Citigroup and here at BNP. And then had something of a midlife crisis and went to serve as chief of staff to our regional CEO for 2 years. And after 2 years, landed in this role. I live in Brooklyn, not too far from here. I grew up in Brooklyn, so did my dad, so does my grandfather, so did my great-grandfather. So I have the real Brooklyn DNA. I have a incredibly patient husband and 3 kids under the age of 12. So, and we all know that 12 is the tip-off year this year in terms of vaccination. So lots to talk about on my end. And I will confess that I'm mostly here. I'm here because George told me to, and it's always a good idea to do what George tells you. That's a good career management move at BNP. But I'm here in part because, you know, I think it's important to keep mental health as front of mind, right? I was thinking about this over the weekend, that I think by now, 18 months into the pandemic, we have a pretty good idea of how to control and manage COVID, right? If you can get vaccinated, wash your hands, wear a mask, social distance, we know all the things that will keep us safe. Now, whether we're doing them or not is a different story, but at least we know. And it occurs to me that there is no such kind of generalized received wisdom about mental health. I don't know. None of us know what the right answer is. And so I'm here to remind myself how important this is, but I am also here really to listen to the Q&A, because I want to hear from the people who are here, what am I missing? What is the stressor that I haven't noticed? I'm looking at this from the perspective of, you know, a married mom of three. People who are in different situations have different stressors. And I am sure that I am getting things wrong. And I count on my colleagues who are on the phone to tell me where I'm getting things wrong, as they always do. So I'm really here to kind of muddle through as much as anyone else is. And with that, I guess I'll hand it over to my friend George.
Thank you, Susana. I don't think I can do as good a job as you in introducing yourself. You're way better a speaker than me. So, hello everybody, I'm George Nunn, as introduced by Gwen. I'm the COO for Markets and Banking. To talk a little bit about PATH, I did do 1 year in M&A ages ago, quickly discovered that was probably not for me, and then ended up into the trading route. This was many, many years ago now, I'm embarrassed to say, or very early 90s. So ended up trading interest rate derivatives for quite a few years, 17 years across a variety of firms, a good chunk of it Paribas, and then other institutions. And then I rejoined BNP 14 years ago, initially in a structuring role, and then moved into foreign exchange sales. And ultimately, when we combine market, the equity and fixed income areas, as the COO for markets, and as of 18 months ago, also the COO for the Banking Americas teams. So that's a very quick one. In regards career stressors, since that's one of the themes, I do want to say that, you know, I want to thank my wife for being the one that's telling me, like, you gotta get off your behind and try new jobs. So that's how I did jump from different A firms, but also roles, because you do get stuck you get stuck from a level of confidence of, oh, I know this space really well and I don't want to try anything new. And ultimately you realize that as your career progresses, yes, specialization is valued, but sooner or later you're going to have to open your horizons and try new things. The topic itself, it's definitely forced me the last 3 days, 4 days after we spoke to Gwen to think about what we want to touch on, and in particular the lack of acknowledgement or let's say the cultural aspect of our industry of we can take on whatever it is. So we will take on unlimited hours of work. We will be adaptable. We will deliver whatever the client asks. With COVID happening, we've lost a lot of the camaraderie that came from, okay, we were in the office and we could be supportive of each other all the time. Even if it was just like, okay, a 20-second exchange as you're walking from one floor to another. And I am conscious of truly the loneliness that that this has forced. And I recognize that it depends on each person's personal situation, but we have definitely had cases within the firm of things from a mental health perspective going down the route of ending up in a crisis. And I think that we collectively need to acknowledge that more, just the same way as the Tokyo Olympics had to acknowledge the stress on the athletes and how the response from society was completely bilateral of, why, what do you mean you have a problem, versus no, we got to acknowledge that that's real and it's happening. So we have a few things to share on that front in terms of, you know, what we have experienced and how that would link to, you know, there are lessons there for, we talk about adaptability, and from a career management perspective, a lot of that falls in that category. So with that, let me pass it back to Gwen.
Well, these are fantastic introductions. Thank you very much. And, you know, thank you very much for being human and transparent. It is tough, and we've all gone through some tremendous times, and it's been pretty ugly at times. So I am really very much looking forward to hearing what you have to say on this topic moving forward. So for the audience, it is a live event, and the chat facility is open. Like Susanna said, it's not just us talking to you, it's also about you talking to us. I'd like you to, if you can, use the chat facility on the Zoom call, that maybe, and start with saying, what do you do every day to actually, or maybe weekly, that encourages you to actually think about your well-being? What is it? If you can, maybe just fill the chat in with various ideas that can maybe help other people. I think that would be very beneficial. So feel free to use the chat as you go along. So let's get started. Kate, over to you.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. I'm based in the UK, and I have been a career coach now for many years, supporting clients through Armstrong Wolf internationally. I couldn't have asked for a better introduction from both Susanna and George, but exactly the reason why I love doing the job that I do. I think both of them demonstrated that careers are not always, in fact, they're rarely linear. Generally speaking, you know, we move around the houses a little bit, we encounter unexpected twists and turns, and shifting priorities as well, as we kind of go through our life course, means that maybe we want to reconsider the path that we're on. I think, you know, both George and Susanna demonstrated that actually part of career management coaching is about sharing stories and building a deeper kind of element of reflection, self-reflection. But actually, you know, returning to the mental health aspect here, I think actually if we remember to share our stories with each other as well, and we use the chat facility today and we do that and we get into the habit of doing that, that's how we help each other. We learn from each other. And, you know, that happens to me all the time. You know, the reason I love doing what I do is I learn so much from the people that I interact with. But, you know, there's a few things that career management coaching can specifically do. We're here to help you understand your skills, what particularly makes you the person you are, what your particular talents might be, and your interests. And we can help you direct those towards your career goals. We can work with you so you've got a time-bound framework to keep you on track, because, you know, we're all leading extremely busy lives, busier than ever. And sometimes it's easy, you know, we all get lost along the way sometimes. It's a bit like, how many times do I claim I'm going to go to the gym 5 times in a week and I get there twice? So, you know, career management coaching is very much about really giving you the framework to achieve what you're looking to achieve. Okay, so moving on. We have worked through this year, through other events. We have covered in quarter one, the event for those of you that weren't there, was about how to navigate your career in a very crowded market, as we all know, you know, how to stand out, how to differentiate yourself. We've also looked in detail at, you know, recognizing how to identify your own personal competencies and how to work on communicating these effectively. And now we're kind of moving on and doing things a little bit differently. We're looking at how we all encounter setbacks. We all have times where things don't go quite on track, quite the way we were expecting them to. And, you know, hasn't the last couple of years brought that home to us? So having some strategies for handling these setbacks is again really, really helpful. And that's what today's about. I think, as you alluded to in the introduction, Gwen, George and Susanna, you know, in preparing for this session today and the conversations that we've been having, it's very clear, as there often are with these things, there are far more questions than answers out there. But hopefully, you know, as I say, in sharing our experiences, we can find ways of addressing some of those questions and move forward and help support ourselves and each other. So we all, you know, we talk about stress. It's a big part of the health continuum. We all have mental health in the same way that we all have health. We all move up and down a continuum at any given time with our health. And it's the same with our mental health. And we all encounter stress. You know, it's out there. It's part of life. It's always been the same, you know, cavemen encounter stress. There's nothing wrong with it. It's how we get things done. It's how we achieve. I know that, you know, I might get stressed before an exam, or I have got stressed before an exam in the past. And then you think, actually, I did better as a result of that stress. So that's fine. Stress is anything that really interferes with our internal homeostasis, our balance. So eustress stress is positive stress. It motivates us. Acute stress is when that gets slightly out of control. You know, when you're starting to have the sleepless nights, when maybe you're a little bit snappier at home with your partner. And that's fine if you can kind of balance it out and get back onto an even keel relatively easily. You recognise it, you deal with it. chronic stress, well, you know, that's when things start to get a bit tricky. It's when you're trying techniques to deal with it, or it's building, or it's coming at you from many different directions. It could be, you know, as many of us experienced over the last few months or the last 18 to 20 months, that, you know, we've got additional pressures at work that we are not prepared for. We don't understand them. We're managing our way through it. We're adapting. At the same time, we might have family members that, you know, are facing health issues, or elderly parents that are in isolation and we're worried about them, or homeschooling, which is a big one. You know, we've all lived very differently, and we've all had to deal with those changes. And sometimes, you know, our bodies can't react quick enough. They can't get back to homeostasis quick enough. And that can, if we don't have the strategies, cause negative effects to our health as well as our mental health over extended periods of time. So stresses are different for everyone. Some people thrive on it. Some people actively seek it out. You know, they want to jump out of aeroplanes or ski down ridiculous black runs. That's great. So it's knowing what's right for you and what the balance is for you, and what you need when you need to step in and self-manage. So Gwen, I think you have some information.
Oh, yeah, I think everyone can read the slide, but I just wanted to add content here on the left-hand side, which is probably the end of the spectrum, really, when stress is very acute. This is one of many social media kind of life lessons that we've learned from people who have gone a bit too far. And this is really a recount of what this person who survived a heart attack due to stress, so what that's his sixth life lessons. And I think we can all learn a few things or two about just taking a step back so it doesn't become that bad. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we all have heard stories or experienced, you know, situations with friends that are similar to this, and I think it graphically represents why it is important not to kind of go, you know what, it'll be better next week, it's going to be fine, I'm going to ignore it. You do have to step in and have a responsibility to yourself and to others to manage situations. Okay, so if we can move on. So again, another example of this is your wonderful American athlete, Caleb Dressel, who I think has highlighted very nicely exactly this point. It's, you know, he achieved his gold medal, an amazing achievement, but he sort of acknowledges that don't let pressure turn to stress. Again, it's about keeping that balance and understanding what's right for you.
Our slide seems to have gone, but on this particular point, I had a question for our guests, actually. So perhaps you can think of one thing in the last 18 months that hasn't gone to plan, that has affected you either from a career challenge or stressor, perhaps from an anecdotal point of view. How did you manage it? If I can maybe start with Susanna.
I mean, let's be clear, the list of things that have gone wrong in the past 18 months is kind of the definition of it, like the collapse of civil society. I hadn't planned on that. That wasn't fun. I would say at the very beginning, I'll be honest, I did not handle it particularly well. There were some phone calls to George that I can't manage this anymore. You know, my house is normally, you know, I get home from work and I have three kids. One of my kids is very ill. He has 24-hour nursing. So there's three kids, a nurse, both my parents, probably a therapist, right? Like it's kind of Grand Central in our house. And from one day to the next, that disappeared. The support network that I had at work disappeared. And I was working 15 hours a day from my bathroom floor. Remember that, guys? You guys, they all got a view of my bathroom floor because that's the only place I could escape my kids. And my kids weren't really doing great, and we couldn't let nurses into our home anymore to care for the kid who needs it. So we were doing that ourselves. And I did kind of the worst possible thing, which is I tried to just white knuckle my way through. You know, legitimately at first, when we all first heard of COVID, this was going to be 6 weeks, right, guys? 2 months, maybe. Nobody thought, right? So I can white knuckle my way through anything for 6 weeks. That's fine. Well, slowly we realized, that probably wasn't a realistic projection. And I want to be very clear when you ask, you know, how did you manage it? I want there to be no ambiguity about my response. I'm not sure that I am managing it. Let's be clear, it's not over, right? The disaster is not over. My kids are still not safe. They are still not vaccinated, right? Like, I don't want to come here and say that I have figured out the secret to balanced mental health during a global pandemic, because I assure you I haven't. But what I did do is I figured out what I was willing to give up, what I needed to do to be okay with myself. So for example, I still, 18 months in, I still have dinner with my kids every night, but there is more than a couple of nights a week that we're all having peanut butter and jelly for dinner, right? And that's okay. You know what? No one ever died from having peanut butter and jelly. No one ever died from having the iPad for an extra 20 minutes at night. That's okay. But it meant kind of boiling life down to the very, very basic components. So that I didn't call George and scream once a month that I couldn't possibly do this anymore. So, George, I'll hand it over to you with a thank you for taking my calls whenever that happened.
No problem at all. Yeah, it's a relief to a degree to be able to be in the office. We've been able to have some people over for a few months now, and obviously to have school options, some in person now. Myself, my kids are a bit older, one's in high school and one's in college, but certainly the experience of last year was having them both home. Okay, yeah, we felt the same thing. It'll be 6 weeks. By the time summer rolls around, you'll be all set back to plan. And after it's 3 months, these are teens, right? They're like, okay, we've maxed out on mom and dad. Like, this is not happening anymore. We need a different plan. And that, you know, in the scheme of things, with teenagers, it's definitely easier than with younger children. You can reason and you can do more with them. But I think it's honestly a huge shout out to all of the both mothers who have had to deal with this with their kids at home and other parental caregivers. It has been tough. And, you know, so going to your question of, you know, what are things that have gone wrong and how have we handled it? I mean, I think the reality for us and anybody else is that everything went wrong, right? We were not prepared. We didn't have everything laid out as to, okay, how are you going to handle everybody working remotely? What are the tools? What are the controls? How do you communicate to clients, et cetera? So, the fact that we're here 20 months later and, you know, nothing is really blown up, is a testament to all of the teams. What have we learned? We've learned, honestly, tremendous resiliency. But I think the thing that I would talk about the most is we use the word collaboration. We used to use the word collaboration before. This whole period has taken it to an entirely new level of, okay, if you're not speaking to 15 other departments about how you're planning to do something, like, you ain't going to get anything off the ground. And in particular, the call a spade, we weren't ready from a technological perspective with all the right tools for people. And we had to, so we had to work with the IT teams. We had to redeploy staff that were not IT specialists to become IT specialists so that they could help. And I want to say to a degree that certainly at the time, and it's spread out, but not as intense. It led to a community feel that while everyone is remote, we're all working on a mission together, and we've got objectives, and we're getting those objectives, et cetera. And so, you know, at BMP, we've tried very hard to stress the importance of, well, you got to figure out how to maintain that community, that connection. And is it easy with everyone virtual? No, it's a freaking nightmare. But that was the only way to help people out with how do I deal with my life being upside down, and B, how do we also help the firm deliver on its goals? So it's a shout out to everybody. The last 20 months is, you know, I don't know that there's any bar that we can set it against. Back to you, Gwen.
I think, you know, what you shared is just fascinating and hugely interesting. I mean, Susanna, wow, you know, to be dealing with those sorts of challenges. But how amazing that, you know, you had that relationship from, you know, with George, that he was able to step in, support you, understand. And I think, you know, your stories really highlight a few issues here. Now, on the slide, you'll see a representation of the various qualities and skills that go into the role of the COO. And, you know, it's quite interesting that previously, prior to the pandemic, this sort of focused on leadership, judgment, yeah, adaptability, strategic thinking, managing conflicting priorities and relationships. But wow, you know, haven't we just heard about how important relationship is, and that ability to communicate, being able to, I mean, manage conflicting priorities, but equally to adapt and reassess those priorities and think, actually, you know what, it's more important we sit around the table together as a family. That is something that I'm not prepared to compromise on. So the human capital element role of the COO has really grown and come into the fore, I think, during the course of the last 20 or so months. George, would you agree with that? Would you have anything to add to this sort of overview? And how have you seen your role evolve?
So, yeah, I would touch on two things. One would be we all of a sudden became safety experts, and we were dealing with all our folks being concerned, naturally concerned about their health and well-being and safety, and what is the right thing for me to do at home? And then what if I am in the workplace, what is the right thing? Am I safe? Am I protected? And so a lot of that was acting as an advisor, explaining, you know, framing what we are doing. And that's why I bring it back to this community building aspect, that the teams needed to feel that we're part of a caring community that is looking out for us. And first and foremost, it's pure health and safety, which, again, if you were to dial back to 2019, health and safety would not have been an item that was up on the list. And then in 2020, it's like, okay, we're going to spend a lot of time. So that's one aspect. And then the other one was, how do we help people who have hey, they're living in a one-bedroom apartment, and they're not able to walk out the door, and they've been stuck in there for 3 months, and how do you make them feel part of a community if they don't have an ability to walk out the door? And as managers, we've had to learn a whole new skill of, all right, how do you read when someone is actually having mental health issues? How do you identify it? And how do you talk about it? And here over the course of the last 18 months, I've had to, rely on people within the firm to say, okay, we have the gamut of situations, but the ones that are in crisis mode and the ones that are just, hey, who can we bring forward? And so there, knowing that we have both external resources, but most importantly, community resources. Who else knows this person? Let's bring them into the discussion. Can you reach out? Can you see how they're doing? So we tried very hard on both fronts of, okay, managers, as part of your daily duties, you now have to reach out to your team, both as a group and as a one-on-one, as frequently as you can, but definitely every week, and in many cases every day, on something that is not work-related. Just check in. Are people doing okay? And get the dialogue going.
And to this, I'm going to segue to a question that we have on the call, on the chat. Thank you, Farina. It is really to Susanna, as a mum of three, as you've kindly shared, and a GM professional. Do you have any advice and tips to balance life in GM? It is really a balancing act. What can you suggest? You're on mute, not very much. Hang on. You're on mute, Susanna. We can't hear you.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can indeed.
Now you can. Okay. Let me put the camera back where it was. I don't know that work-life balance exists. I just think that's if you're shooting for that, you're not going to make it. You're not going to get there, and you're always going to feel like a failure. You're not a failure. Sometimes my boss calls me on Sunday mornings while I'm on vacation, and I take his call. I don't mind actually at all, because I also feel completely unguilty about leaving work for an hour and a half in the middle of the day to go to SoulCycle. I don't feel guilty. I don't feel sorry about that, because I know my boss is going to call on Sundays, so I'm going to take the time for myself too. I don't apologize or hide when I go to parent-teacher conferences. I make sure everybody knows I'm going to a parent-teacher conference, because I want that to be the tone from the top for my teams. That being said, I call my team sometimes on their vacations too, right? And there's a flexibility on both sides there that I always really appreciate. I try to respect their time, and those of you who are on my team on the screen will be able to tell me if I do a good job of that. But, sometimes work takes over, and that's an okay thing. I do what I do because I do think it's important. I do think my job is important, and I wouldn't spend 70 hours a week doing something that I didn't think actually really deeply mattered, not just to me, but to the community at large, not the BNP community, like actually matters to the country. I wouldn't bother. I wouldn't bother if I didn't think it mattered. But I also feel no shame in dropping my job in a hot second when my kids need me. And I have never once in my entire career told my management, I need to leave because my kid is sick, or I need to leave, whatever, and gotten pushback about it. Because I think that the general pushback is because people are afraid that you're taking advantage. People are afraid that you're being disingenuous. And I've always tried to cultivate kind of trust with management and with my teams, so that they know that, you know, I'm not kidding. But I think the most important message is don't try to balance it. Over the course of a career, it'll be balanced. Over the course of a day, a week, a month, no way. George, do you have any words of wisdom, hopefully more uplifting words of wisdom than the ones that I just gave?
I echo your remarks about, hey, life has to happen, and health and family come before work. And we've had plenty of instances where this has come up, and I do similar to yourself. Hey, I got to take time, and you know, in my case, there's college visit or there's a coach call, and sorry, I'm not available. But we try to, well, we not just try, we communicate this to our teams. The challenge here is that the culture of the financial industry is one that, oh, you know, you got to take on 120 hours a week and you just got to handle it. Like, no, that doesn't work. So, and in particular with everyone remote, it's like, hey, speak up, right? We know that there's a lot of things coming your way, but if it's too much, A, speak about it. And if you need to do it over different time horizons, et cetera, that's totally fine. And the reality of what the teams have done is everyone's adapted. It comes back to, do you trust your people, right? And if you trust them, they're going to pay that trust back with the work-life balance that they seek, which is, hey, I'm going to work 9 to 3, then I got to take care of the kids from 3 to 5:30, and then I'm going to come back on 6 to 9. Okay, if that's what needs to happen to make it happen, done. And, you know, the nature of the works that we have is we can actually deliver it that way. So why not? But part of that is you have to have the trust of your managers and your senior management that, hey, don't worry, we're gonna get the job done. It's just not going to be FaceTime in the office 9 to 5 like you were used to. And to be frank, I was on a call with an industry COO, and they themselves commented, like, even if we come back to normal, we're going to have our people leave the office 5 or 6 p.m. No more FaceTime in the office. Go live your life. And if we need you to switch back on, you switch back on, you know, from home. I think this part is it's going to be permanently different.
It's also down to culture. And actually, we have a really good question from Tobias in the chat, which actually echoes what you just said. Around the community, the increasing of trust in teams, that we also help senior leaders to breathe and reduce business concerns and allow time for family. So I think, Tobias, your question has been answered here from the speakers, but obviously if anyone else would like to chat and respond to Tobias, by all means, please feel free. It is indeed about finding boundaries, and it's about getting the culture right for you and for your team. So communication really is at the heart of trying to find a semi-balance or something that works for you if it isn't balanced. Kate, you had other questions for our speakers. You are muted, Kate.
Apologies for that. I was going to say, I think you've covered some of the content of the questions that, you know, I was very interested to know how you look out for the signals that your team are encountering stress. And you talked about that, you touched upon that. It's obviously something that you're extremely sensitive to, George. So if I could ask you, is there any specific triggers or anything that, you know, you've built up that intuitive response now that you think that's not right? Anything in particular you look out for?
It is difficult. A part of this, you need to know the people. So it's one thing to to judge for staff. Well, I'm sure that we've all had this situation over the last 18 months. We brought in new people, right? So for the people that we knew already because we worked together before the pandemic, we had a way of, okay, we know how they act, how they think, how they behave. And then when we know, it's noticeable to see, oh, wait, there's a change here. Something doesn't feel right. And then that's the new learning. And the tricky thing is, well, but what I want to do as a human being is I want to reach out and offer support and guidance and advice. As a manager and representing a company, I also have to think, well, but where can I go and how far do I take this? So I have taken the approach of, look, as a human being, I see that you're in pain and that you need, we need to acknowledge your pain. And I need to tell you, these are the things that I would do that you should be looking at. Can we use that for, judging it for everyone, especially new staff? That's pretty hard because you don't have the established relationship. It's real. It's happened. We have, I think, done a good job about responding to it, acknowledging that it exists, acknowledging the challenge. But by no means would I say, oh, we don't have this. It's under the cover. It's under the table. No, there's still issues that continuous awareness building has to be done. Susanna, you want to jump in on your side?
Yeah, no, I think, I'm a little bit less nuanced than George, which I think probably surprises no one. But I just ask. Like, there's, one person who George and I both work very closely with. And every once in a while, I'll just literally call him and say, hey, mental health check, where are you? How you doing? I'm not calling about a project. I'm not calling about securities-based swap dealer. I'm calling because a little while ago you weren't okay, and I want to see how you are. I get pretty honest answers, not just from this person, but from a lot of different people. And I think one thing that BNP has done well is respond to people who are in active crisis. So I had someone on my team as well who clearly was, came to me and said, I'm not okay. And I didn't hesitate. I felt very comfortable knowing that I would have support from the institution in saying, please hang up the phone, go to your doctor, take care of your health, call me when you're ready to come back. I got you. And that was it. I knew that I wasn't going to get pushback from my management in having given him essentially a limited time off to take care of himself. And I'm not the only, he's not the only one, right? There are many people throughout the bank who have been able to take time off. And I think that's one thing that BNP does really well is give people time. What I think I'm still struggling with is kind of the slow simmer mental health crisis of someone who's kind of generally been unhappy for 18 months, maybe is having one more drink than they should on a weekday night, that type of thing. Not someone who is in the fetal position on the floor. We can deal with that. It's people who are maybe quieter about it or who are less in crisis. And so it's easier to, it's kind of like the frog in the pot of boiling water. If you're in the water as it heats up, I think there are people that I have missed on my own team because it's been such a gradual change. So that's where I'm still struggling. I'm still working on it.
Okay. Thank you, Susanna. But I just wanted to pitch in here because obviously there'll be a lot of people on the call will probably say, gosh, this is fantastic and this is amazing and empathetic leadership at its best. But ultimately, there is still a job to do. And there are lots of conflicting priorities. priorities in the role, and we need to ensure that the teams that we manage are prioritized so it doesn't become, so it's manageable and it doesn't become overwhelming. And maybe being overwhelmed can lead to stressful situations, and then obviously we don't want to have this call to say, go and check yourself at the doctor, he's clearly not well. So it's, how do you prioritize these conflicting priorities so your team feel empowered to make the right choices of take tackling the first task first and getting on with it?
I mean, we give them a safe space. The first thing that I tell my managers and that they tell their teams is it's a safe area for you to speak up and say, hey, this is too much. I can't deliver. And what am I dropping? So we were just talking about it earlier today about, hey, where does this new item fall on the list? And like, well, can it be done? Is there any resource availability? No, there isn't. Well, then just rack it and stack it. Put it up in the list of something that we will get to, but not at the expense of people burning out. That's why I say the culture of finance, the BNP or other firms is one of, oh, we'll take everything on and we'll do it by tomorrow. That culture, we're actively messaging, no. We need to be sensible about what can be done. But at the same time, it's healthy, right? We want our teams to be the ones saying, you know, I can do up to here and this is okay. And feel that it's safe to say, hey, but no more, right? And then, okay, what are the actions? Well, this stuff is not priority, fine, so we'll get, you know. So I'm not saying it's easy because, of course, as you pointed out, Gwen, the demands in our business are very big, but we are increasingly trying to make sure that people feel, hey, it's a safe space to speak out.
I would just add to that, if I could, that one thing that I think is a bit cultural, maybe it's culturally specific to BNP, is that we tend to make decisions in a very centralized manner. And when I personally have felt myself get stressed out and, you know, I'm going to walk out of here and close the door, and it's when I feel that I'm being micromanaged and second-guessed by my own management that, you know, why do you pay me if I can't make decisions, if you don't trust my judgment? Mm-hmm. And I tell I have four people who are reporting into me directly. I tell them that all the time. You know, if you think that project A is more important than project B, or you think that we should approach project A this way, I trust your judgment, right? I try to be very explicit in not micromanaging what they're doing. The four people I have reporting into me are all subject matter experts in what they do and frankly know a lot more than I do about it, which is why we employ them, right? Shareholders don't pay them so that they can have me make the decision. So I do try to, yes, as George said, give people a safe space and have them be able to tell me, you know, I have 9 projects and that 10th one is going to break the camel's back, but also to, you know, they're grown-ups. And to kind of have a hand in how we prioritize things, I think is important to gaining that trust that we talked about at the top of the hour of, you know, making sure that they understand that I respect what they bring to the table, which is why they're there. They're not there to be warm bodies.
And thank you for your honest replies and responses. So I've got one more question for you. So obviously we've learned a lot. You said at the beginning, we've learned a heck of a lot. And just wanted to know whether as managers you have learned from this and how this has helped you moving forward as people. What have you learned in terms of managing people in a hybrid environment, going back into an office, a bit of everything, a bit of a yo-yo effect. And what has this taught you, really, as managers moving forward in such a busy environment?
So I'll take that one. I'll go first, if that's okay. I'm going to tell a story that goes back a long time that some of you have heard before, so forgive me. This was I was in EQD, I was in trading, and I'd been at BNP for about a year, maybe a little bit more than a year. And I found out that I was pregnant with my daughter, my second child. And so I in our team meeting the next morning, I said it was all, you know, my colleagues and my boss already knew. And I said to my colleagues, I just hit 3 months. I'm pregnant. I'm due in April. But don't worry. You know, this isn't my first rodeo. I already have a kid. I went on maternity leave when I was at Citigroup. I kind of know how this works. Like, it'll be a well-oiled machine. Don't worry about it. Silence. I mean, you could have heard a pin drop in that room, which I thought was kind of a socially awkward response. Like, I did somewhat expect a congratulations, but okay, whatever. They're, you know, guys like Cliff Davis, they're kind of weird dudes. Like, sure. And my boss actually pulled me aside a few hours later, and he said, do you know what happened in there? Do you know why everyone was silent and why they were all upset? And I was like, okay, you don't get to be upset that I'm pregnant. Like, that's not how this works. Apparently, none of them, men who I had been sitting literally 18 inches away from for the past year and 3 months, none of them knew that I had a child. None of them knew that I had a 2-year-old son. And to me, that was a horrible lesson in authenticity or lack thereof. What had I been hiding, not knowing it, not intending to hide the fact that I was a young mother at the time? What does that say about me? And the risks that I'm willing to take and the openness and the vulnerability that I'm willing to show at work. And it was one of the top 5 worst days of my entire career. It was awful. And it's something that I still struggle with. I still struggle with what's the right amount of vulnerability to show before it gets to be too much. And then it's something, you know, then I won't be respected anymore. And this pandemic has forced the issue. It's forced my hand. I tried, you guys will remember, I tried to hide the fact that I was on my bathroom floor, and then someone realized that there was a towel rack behind me and was like, wait, Susanna, where are you? And I was like, all right, well, I might as well say the truth, right? It's hard for me to be, it's hard, I think, for anyone. But I think that the story with my pregnancy announcement indicates that it's a little bit harder for me than for most people to admit that there is, you know, there's 360 degrees of me like everybody else. And what I have learned is that I told everyone, including not for nothing our CEO, that I was sitting in the bathroom while I was having, you know, I was on his town hall. You know, nobody was mad. Everybody kind of laughed and said, yeah, sucks for us too, and moved on. And so that was kind of the lesson. And I don't think it's a lesson that I've entirely internalized at this point, but I'm still working on it. That screwing up isn't necessarily the worst thing, or being not having it entirely together sometimes is helpful in getting people to see you as an actual person, which apparently is helpful, I've learned.
We're all people before the task, aren't we?
So with that, thank you. And George, I'll turn it over to you, because I'm sure you've learned some stuff as well.
I think we need to... Susanna is a trailblazer. She is very honest.
Nobody else was on their bathroom floor. That's right. I blazed that trail like no other, George. That's right.
No, but come on. What I mean is your honesty and sharing your experience. And we all have things that we feel secretive about our life, our family, our friends, etc. And at the end, you know, and that's what we've learned from this pandemic is life and work have commingled completely. and that you have to get to know people. You're forced to get to know people because basically you're in their homes every day, right? You're no longer in an office. But I think the trailblazing part of what you said, Susanna, is just being transparent and sharing with others the fact that, hey, it's not the end of the world to be transparent. And in fact, you know, you normalize a lot. Especially given the nature of the discussion we were having today, or career, mental health, et cetera, that transparency of voice is very important to share.
Most definitely. Thank you. We are now on the hour. We will probably have to drop soon. But Kate, do you want to summarize?
Yeah, I would like to just say thank you. It's just been a huge privilege to hear from you both. I talked at the beginning about how we learn from each other's stories, and I just think, hasn't this session demonstrated that? Just totally. I think also the other thing that I think you've demonstrated really, really clearly, George and Susanna, is the importance of trust in relationships, in the workplace. All relationships, obviously, but certainly, you know, it's very, very valuable in the workplace as well. And with that trust, I think what builds that trust is open communication. And, you know, it is tough to share, you know, our whole authentic selves in the workplace. I think everyone here probably holds something back. You know, our work persona is slightly different. But actually, don't we just forge, you know, valuable relationships and connections, and don't we continue to build that collaboration that actually makes us so much more effective in our roles, and we can enjoy our roles so much more if we can take that step. I know it's not easy, and Susanna, thank you so much for being so open and honest, but yeah, I think if we all can just take a little bit of that away with us, that would be absolutely great. You know, the quote from the World Health Organization demonstrates that a state, you know, good mental health is a state of well-being in which every individual realizes his or her own potential, can cope with the normal stresses of life, work productively and fruitfully, and make a contribution to her or his community. And the stories that you've told have demonstrated that brilliantly. And you know, BMT sounds like one of those supportive organisations that does promote a culture of well-being. And I know that you and George and Susanna are actively living those values and helping those that you work with. So thank you. Just an amazing session.
Thank you indeed. I will let everyone go. I am delighted that you managed to come to this forum today. Thank you, George. Thank you, Susanna. Thank you, Kate, also for your content. I hope everyone has taken at least one thing out of this forum. We can talk about mental health and setbacks and stressful situations for such a long time. But I think transparency and honesty and really being authentic and genuine about who we are behind the task is really, really important. And the more we talk about it, the more we will normalize it. This sense of community and camaraderie really need to be at the forefront of all discussions. It's very important that we keep talking to our people, particularly the ones that we don't know yet, that have just been onboarded and we've just met via screen. We've got to make a real effort in getting to know these people. Now, as this slide says, and as a goodbye slide, healthy is the new wealthy. Please look after yourself. Thank you very much for attending. Goodbye.
Thank you.